Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yeah, that song, this, and the song with the Dashboard Confessional from the last album was just,
Hopes Up, yeah, man. And we talk about how that all came together in this podcast.
That's also a dope chorus right there.
Yo, you know who else jumped into his DMs and said he was a fan?
I couldn't possibly guess.
Not on the album, but I think this artist has made your favorite album of the year so far.
Charlie Puth?
Charlie Puth.
Damn, son. Well done, nothing nowhere. Getting the Puth sign of approval, man. That's like gold in this.
People are coming on to Nothing Nowhere right now.
Yeah. As a second Billboard podcast this week, I've talked about Charlie Puth having my favorite album of the year so far. I did it on Trevor and Gary's Trophy podcast just a couple days ago. Shout out to Charlie Puth. Nothing Nowhere. Do you guys talk at all about like the other side of emo rap? Is he a Juice WRLD fan?
That is the other thing I was going to mention. All right. Did this podcast a few weeks ago, and to get a sense for the time frame of this, I asked him for some other rappers that he was inspired by, kind of that SoundCloud world, and he mentioned Juice WRLD. I was like, oh shit, he just got into the Hot 100, and we were like, whoa, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That was when the song was like 91, Lucid Dreams.
Oh, wow.
And now it's number
four. All those many weeks ago, yeah.
It feels like ages ago, but...
Yeah. Yeah, we thought he was going to be in contention for number one at one point, but that ended up not coming to pass. But yeah, like it makes sense that it seems like he comes at it from a little bit more of like the emo background, and obviously Juice WRLD and his compatriots come at it a little bit more from hip hop. But there's a definite middle ground there. It's interesting to see so many different artists kind of meeting there these days.
Yeah, if you read recent interviews with Juice WRLD and ask about what his inspirations are, he'll mention a bunch of emo artists
and Billy Idol. Did you ever watch that Nardwar interview he did with the Juice WRLD one?
No, but if you want to hear about Billy Idol on the 2005 Warped Tour.
That's right.
My 2005 Warped Tour oral history on billboard.com. Check it out. It's there.
Nardwar gave Juice WRLD a Billy Idol LP, and he was very, very excited about that. So maybe he'd be excited to be reading your 2005 Warped Tour oral history.
Nardwar, if you're listening, come on the show.
Yeah.
Get in here.
he's one of a kind, certainly.
So this interview you're about to hear is me chatting with not just Nothing Nowhere, but also his producer, Joey, a.k.a. JV. Both these guys are Joes, Joe and Joey. Nothing Nowhere, I might butcher his last name, Joe Mulheron. That's Nothing Nowhere, him and his producer, JV, here in the Billboard studio. We had this chat a few weeks back, all about his recent works, like we were saying, his inspirations. He even talked about some new music he's got coming out. He said he's got some
more new music.
Secret mad scientist stuff is what he called it, and it's coming up in the coming months. And playing us into this interview, this is Nothing Nowhere's Clarity and Kerosene. Here it is.
All I know is that there's clarity and kerosene. All I know, you can't take back the words you said to me.
Do you think, you mentioned the Boston show, like that being a little bit more close to the home base, does that tend to be where you get the best shows?
That was the Boston show was my first like headlining show. home, like hometown headlining show, because I grew up in Foxborough. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of funny. I wasn't, didn't really know what to expect, but so far it was the craziest crowd. Because like, I started Nothing Nowhere. It wasn't like playing local shows or anything. It was very much a product of like the internet. So I wasn't sure, but it was insane. Yeah, it was crazy. Like every single time I'd see someone like crowd surf towards me, I'd realize that they're like one of my friends or someone that I knew, and they just like one by one, like a friend or family member would just like crowd surf towards me. I'd be like, it was just, it got so funny.
Yeah, and at the Brooklyn show that we were just talking about, you had like people who played previously on the bill were all like in the crowd jumping around.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anytime like anyone on the bill like plays, like everyone's always in the crowd. Like the artists too, like to support them. It's like really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw JV like in Brooklyn. I looked out like two songs in, and I just see like his big head just like in the crowd above everyone else. I was like, just like, I yeah. thought you were like a kid, and then I was like, no, that's JV.
Yeah, because on tour, I'm just always on stage and I'm just watching the show, and I just see how crazy it is. And then there's always the front row, just people crying, and then I just like start crying on stage. But then, like, it was the last show, so like, I was like, fuck it, like, I'm going in the middle
yeah,
of the crowd.
Yeah.
I'm going where there's the pit. Like, I'm not going to just sit here and cry this time.
Can you do both at the same time?
Yeah, I think I was doing both at one point.
Yeah, so before we go too far into this, why don't you guys introduce yourselves for the listeners?
Yeah, so I'm Nothing Nowhere, also known as Joe.
I'm JV, also known as Joey.
Yeah, and explain, take us back, explain as succinctly as you can how you two came to work together and what it is that you're working on currently.
Right, so I started really like actually posting music under the name Nothing Nowhere in 2015. You know, I just like produced everything myself, did all the instruments myself, blah blah blah, did it for a while. I think I met Joey 2016 in just like in SoundCloud DMs. I think we were like in like a Skype chat together, and we both just like the same stuff, like skateboarding and stuff, and we just like, we started working on a song together. We made one song. We were listening to Title Fight, and like okay. the first song we ever made was like a Title Fight type, like inspired song.
Yeah, I was just like going through my notifications when I was like not taking it that seriously, and just saw that someone with more followers liked my track. So I just like hit him in DMs, and we started working on stuff, and it just like was way more organic than expected, and like they were all coming out like way better than we thought it was gonna come out.
Yeah, because yeah. I mean, like, I had never, like, collaborated with anyone really, like, before that, so it was, like, a pleasant surprise, and clearly, like, it's cool chemistry and stuff, because we're still doing it now. Like, now, we worked on Reaper, which was the album that came out October, this mm-hmm. past October, and then we just more or less recently worked on Ruiner, which came out, like, a month or two ago, and, yeah, it's just fun to, like, work with your friends, because... why not?
Yeah, it always just ended up being super organic with every track, and Ruiner just ended up being like every song idea just was like what we were talking about the night before, like in our conversation, it just would carry over and stuff. So
sure,
just dudes being pals making tunes. mm-hmm.
Not really thinking about it too hard, but having good outcome.
Yeah, so there's hip-hop and punk and emo and hardcore side by side in the music you make now. So I'm wondering, for each of you, where did your interest in those genres come along in your lifespans? Like, what came first?
So I mean, like, for me, I grew up, I think like the first album I ever got was like Linkin Park or something, and then like as I grew up, like there was a pretty good like post-hardcore like kind of emo scene, even hardcore scene in the suburbs of Massachusetts, like just VFW shows and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I got interested in like local bands like Have Heart and like Energy. There was like just like a bunch of Massachusetts bands, and Therefore I Am in Vanna. Mm-hmm. Just was all around kind of like in skate parks and stuff, and I had some older cousins that were really like influencing me in like the emo stuff, at least like second wave emo. Remember my older cousin Dan used to pick me up in his Volvo and play Dashboard Confessional or like American Football, and it was just like the coolest thing I've ever heard. So I got into like sort of like alternative music just through my surroundings, like the people I hung out with.
Yeah, I think I got into alternative music just because my dad was showing me like old like dad bands like Black Sabbath and stuff like that, and that was like the first music I heard that I was like, oh, like I want to, you know, listen to the whole album and like hear the whole sound. And then just through the radio, I started getting like really infatuated with like sounds like Linkin Park and like Red Hot Chili Peppers. And then just when I was getting older, because that was when I was super young, but when I started getting older, there wasn't really a scene like that around me with like hardcore bands and stuff like that. So I think everyone around was just listening to like Chief Keef and like Glow Gang stuff. So so I was listening
Joey's
to
12
that.
Years old, for those who don't know.
Yeah, no, when I was in high school, people were listening to rap music, so I had like the alternative when I was younger, and now then I started getting more into rap stuff, and then it kind of just made its way together.
When did making beats come along?
In high school, when I had friends that were rapping, and okay. I just wanted to fit in and like make their tracks for them, because I knew I could rap. So
okay. So it was sort of a way of like finding your niche and like, huh, what am I good at?
Yeah, for sure, because I definitely didn't want to like play sports and shit and like hang out with those kids, so I just wanted to hang around my friends who were rapping and just make beats for them.
Yeah. Yeah, looking back on like the rap rock stuff that you're talking about here, it's funny how it's like, in a general sense, like both of you as artists, like the Linkin Park guys and you guys, fuse things, like you could say like, sure, but the way that they did it was just very, you know, direct. It would be like a singing verse and a hip hop verse. I mean, not every like Linkin Park or POD song was like that, but it was a lot more just like, what's the word I'm looking here? Like sort of direct and in your face. Yeah, I guess you could say that. Yeah. For you guys, it's a lot more intertwined. It seems a good deal deeper.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, it's flattering to even be, like, spoken to in the same breath as, like, Linkin Park, obviously. Like, but I think, I don't know, I just think I like to consider what I do kind of experimental and, like, I don't necessarily want to just take from two genres. Like, I listen to everything. I try to listen to everything, even things that I wasn't sure about. Like, I try to dive into it and see what I can pull from it. I don't know. Like, I just feel like it's even in the process of like being experimental, like working on an album, like, oh, how can I write a song, or like, how can I make the weirdest thing possible? Sometimes most of the stuff I make is just too weird. It's just noise music. You know what I mean? I think we've run into that a lot. Yeah. Where like, it's hard. I mean, it's hard to like try and seek out a new sound, because like who does that? You know what I mean? Like, so I feel like the journey from trying to create a new sound, you get a lot of like interesting sounds, and sometimes it works and most of the time it doesn't.
Yeah, that's when it starts to sound a little formulaic, like you said before. But I think I approach production like the same way you're just saying, how I just dive into everything I like and try to pick out like my favorite shit from each kind of genre, and then it just kind of naturally comes out in production, which is kind of how it works with you too. Like, we're not really thinking about it to that extent. It's just kind of like what we're listening to will naturally come out when we're trying to write a song.
Mm-hmm.
And usually it's, I mean, like there's hundreds of songs that will never see the light of day.
Yeah, which is exactly why, because we'll just be writing stuff and listening to absurd stuff, and it'll just not be cohesive.
It sounds like there's a lot of stuff locked away for now, but really, you've released a lot of stuff in the past 12 months alone. Two albums and more.
Yeah, and that's like nothing compared to like what I was doing when I was, you know, before I was on like a label or anything like that. I mean, like, and even in like SoundCloud terms, that's nothing. People release an album a month. Mm-hmm. And whether that's good or bad, whether being that prolific is good or bad, I mean, it's definitely a philosophy that some musicians have, where it's just kind of like, I'm creating things and here's just my endless stream of content. Maybe that works for some people, maybe it doesn't, but I don't know. I just, for the reason why I've been releasing a lot of stuff is just because I've had, it's kind of been like a why not mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like making music, and like I have to make music. And when it was brought up in conversation, like after Reaper, like, hey, do you want to put out some more music? I was like, I have some more music, so why not? You know,
yeah, I've got plenty.
And now, you know, like looking back, it's like, okay, well, now I can pump the brakes. And going back to being like when I was talking about being experimental in the process, if like, you know, Ruiner was based on minimalism, the next album can be something a little bit different, a little more thought out, a little more methodical. I don't want to say methodical, but you know, I'm looking forward to I've never taken my time with an album like that, so we'll see what happens.
Sure.
Yeah.
And you got some great attention already behind Reaper. I mean, you got a great profile from John Caramonica in the Times, and he named it in the New York Times his number one album of the year. Like, what was that like?
Just mind-blowing. Because I've said this in previous interviews, I feel like it's kind of like I don't have that much self-confidence. I never have, and that's just something that I work on every single day. And I'm my biggest critic, you know what I mean? So for someone like John Caramonica from the New York Times, who I already admired, like I love his podcast, like I just think he's an awesome dude, to say something like that, it's just kind of like took a while for me to accept that and for it to register like in my brain. I don't know. I also don't want to let it go to my head or anything like that. It's just kind of like, okay, this was something pretty monumental that's happened to me, and I just got to keep moving forward and like making the best stuff that I can. You know, it was just insane. It was just insane.
It's like, shit, I'm dealing with this imposter syndrome bullshit I'm trying to drown out. And it's like, oh, all right, New York Times profile. That'll like put it aside for at least a little bit of time.
Yeah, but it really didn't. Like, I mean, like, yeah, like, I don't know. I just would like, I felt like I was being punked. Like, I felt like Ashton Kutcher was going to like smash through my ceiling.
Yeah, dude, I was like bugging when I saw that. It was definitely surreal to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because it kind of happened ridiculously fast to me, because it was just one day we're making tracks. I'm in like my college dorm room sending him emails, and then the next day we're flying out in LA and we're doing it in the studio. So,
because like,
doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, I don't know. Because like the number, like from my perspective, like if I was like looking at like number one records or something, like mine would be like not even make the top 100. So,
I mean, it's my favorite music, so
it makes one of us. Yeah.
So coming up, what is? Do you have a good amount more touring coming up? I know you're doing Billboard Hot 100 Festival. Shout out to that.
Hey.
So next few months, whether it be recorded stuff or live, anything else, what's coming up for you guys?
Yeah. So there's a tour coming up. JV's on the tour too. It's me. Wick of Phase, Springs Eternal, Bogues, who's an amazing artist that I'm friends with, Lil West, and then JV. Yeah, so we're doing that in August. I mean, like, you could check out the dates, so like nothingnor.net or just like my socials or whatever. That's gonna be fun. But I mean, up until then, I'm working on some secret mad scientist stuff that's gonna come out.
The new maximalist stuff you mentioned.
That is not that. No, it's not that. Yeah, I got to sneak in a little something more before that project.
Yeah. So busy stuff coming up. I want to talk more about the live show.
Sure.
You know, I had a great time at the show at Babies over the weekend. I thought it was really inspiring, the part where you shouted out, like, I want this to be a good place for people with depression or social anxiety to come together. And it's, you know, it's just after a dropped a song where everyone was moshing and having a great time. It's like, why is it important to you to have a good place for accepting of things like that?
Yeah, I mean, because I've been there. Like I said, growing up in this like the suburbs of Massachusetts, there was a really like fertile like growing scene, and I missed out on a lot of that. I missed out on most of that because I let my social anxiety and like my anxiety keep me inside.
Mm-hmm.
And looking back in retrospect, like it's like I regret that. And I've talked to a lot of kids on tour, and I've got to know like my supporters to a sense that like I know that it's hard for them as well, because it's you know, it's a certain type of music. It's like sort of therapeutic to some of these kids, and I know that they're like me. Like, I enjoy listening to music in my room with my door locked with my headphones, but I also love going and seeing live music, but there's that barrier there. So I just want to like set an example and like inspire kids to like just try and come out of, like, make that first step. You know, like, getting in the venue is going to be weird. There's a lot of people you don't know. There's like not a lot of space, but I feel like once you let go and once you just like jump into the fire, in a sense, like, it's so worth it. And then hopefully once you do that, you can apply that to other aspects of your life that your anxiety might be like holding you back from.
Yeah, I really think music scenes, all sorts of music scenes, have been that sort of a resource, that welcoming place for a long time. But it's somewhat rare when the artist on stage puts it out there that succinctly.
Yeah, yeah, because, like, you know, like, I'm a human being, and even, like, you know, like, massive artists are human beings, and I think it's cool to, like, remind people of that, and, like, yeah, because I don't think a lot of people know too much about me, but I think it's cool to be like, hey, I've suffered with some stuff, and if you're going through some stuff, too, it's, like, you know, it gets better.
Sure.
And it can. So, it's pretty cool. I mean, did you go to shows growing up?
Yeah, I went to a couple shows, but there was that barrier for me too, because obviously I just would, you know, the best time for me to listen to music was in my room, lights off, door locked, and headphones. And I remember that feeling where I would be so excited, I would be thinking all week about going to a show, and then I get there and I'm in the crowd and like my hands are shaking just because there's so many people in the room, and it would weird me out, and it was like something new to me. So, like, being the DJ and being the first person on the stage, that's, like, definitely what I want to get people, like, out of their shell and, like, just ready for like, a great experience, you know what I mean? Like, especially seeing their favorite artists and stuff. I know a lot of shows, they'll just have the headliner come right out, and I definitely want people to just be ready for it.
Yeah, set the tone.
Yeah, for sure.
And I feel like you can make, like, a ton of, like, make friends at shows. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of kids go to, they're like scared of going to shows like alone. But at the end of it, like, if I go say what's up at the merch table or whatever, like, they're like best pals. Like, they just like make friends. You know what I mean? So if anyone's listening and you're like, you're not sure about going to shows or whatever, just give it a shot. And like, you know, I guarantee you'll make it out the other side, and like, you won't regret going, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like, with these, you don't tour with small bills. It's not like you and one opener. With the show we were just talking about and the one you shouted out coming up, there's 3, 4, 5 artists on these bills, and it seems like they all kind of generally come from this world, this, you know, the SoundCloud world that you were talking about earlier, that kind of brought all these people from different areas, different walks of life together with this music.
Yeah, I feel like it's like, and even more than that, I feel like it's just friends. Like, I've been fortunate to like just bring friends on tour, which is like, you know, that's like an amazing thing to be able to do, because it's like, you know, you're traveling the country and world, you know, playing some songs, and you're with your best friends. It's like, you know, I bet when I hope when I'm older and I could look back and it's like, I feel like there'll be some pretty fond memories of this moment in my life. But it is, you know, like, it is cool. Like, I want Nothing Nowhere shows to be like all inclusive and like, you know, there's no judgment there, and like, just every, and that's like for every act on the bill, you know what I mean? Like, I want to have people who will also harbor the same message that I'm trying to put forth. So, you know, just keep the positive vibes going.
Yeah, like in Lil West, he's someone you both have collaborated with.
Yeah, he's a character, dude. He's like, you know, like, really artistic guy. I think a lot of his stuff might even go over some people's heads, because he's just so, you know, he's also really into experimental stuff and just like doing weird stuff. He'll do a whole song where his voice is like pitched up or something. Yeah. And like, it's just cool to like work with people like that. People who just, you know, want to like break the mold a little bit. And I feel like West is like a perfect example of that. And he's just like,
just chill dude.
Just a chill dude. Yeah. Yeah. Shout out West.
Yeah, and remind me the name of the artist who came out right before you at the show.
Shinigami.
Yeah, he was fun. His beats were like even more towards like the hardcore stuff.
Yeah, he had some like breakdowns in his set. And
yeah,
stuff.
Also experimental.
Yeah.
And then he was out in the pit. He was out crowd surfing.
Yeah, and like, here's the thing, like, I like, this type of music and this type of scene, like, totally isn't for everyone. And, like, I don't think any of us expect it to be for everyone. Like, I think us as people, like, we're, our influences and, like, our tastes are so all over the place that, like, it's not a one-stop shop. You don't really know what you're going to get. And, but I think personally, like, the shows are, like, that's a fun aspect of it. Yeah. I don't think that a lot of people really know what to expect.
Yeah, but I think that also makes it super accessible for people, because even if you don't come for one act or you come just looking for one type of sound, you're gonna be introduced to new stuff. And even if you don't come knowing anyone, you know, there's gonna be something for everybody there. So yeah, I think that's fun.
And I never thought that I'd play live shows, and I didn't think that would be a thing with this project, but I'm really glad that, like, it is. So
yeah, let's drop in some music.
Let's do it.
Let's drop in Hammer.
Let's do it. Some more one, they can never be me, cause I'm the reaper in your dreams, cause taking spots on it, try to cloud for sobriety. I can feel the hate building up, it's inside of me. I'm more one, it's a more one, they can never be me, cause I'm the reaper in your dreams, cause lady guitar like the ocean channel, rapping VT like my name Bernie Sanders, living two lives like my name Danny Phantom, all my shit bang like a motherfucking hammer, lady guitar like.
Yeah, so why don't you chat a little bit about Vermont? Because I know it's an important thing for you, and I think Hammer is a good connection to that. So tell me, just why does Vermont resonate so much with you?
Yeah, I think Vermont is, like, drenched in nostalgia, and it's my, you know, it's my happy place. My family's had a cabin up there my whole life. You know, I have, like, aunts and uncles who live up there. Went to college up there, but I feel like, you know, some of my earliest memories are, like, you know, could be, like, camping or hiking with my dad up there, and just really therapeutic, you know what I mean? Like, I have so many crazy memories of, like, running up to a bear on a trail, or, like, you know, seeing a moose. Yeah, I have 3 separate bear stories where I've run into bears.
What's the scariest one?
So the first one, that was the second one. So second time I ever had a bear encounter, I was camping in the White Mountains, and I was with my friend Derek Vital, and we were asleep. I don't know what time it was. It must have been like 4 a.m. or something. And he woke me up in the middle of the night, like, hey, like, I hear something sniffing around. You know, like, you should probably, like, check this out. And I kind of brushed it off. I was like, it's whatever. It's a raccoon. I fell back asleep. He woke me up again, hyperventilating, and was like, no, you really need to check this out. So I looked out on the outside of the tent, and there was a black bear there. Turns out we had forgot to put away our food. We just fell asleep. It was there, and it was sniffing around, really interested in our tent. And, you know, like, long story short, we ended up staying up, like, until the sun came up, until we heard nothing, and we got out of the tent. Everything was just torn up. Like, our food was everywhere. The cooler was, like, in the woods, and it was just terrifying. But yeah, I mean, like, other than that, you know, being
I was hyperventilating just sitting here listening to you tell that story.
I've been jogging in Vermont and run up on black bears, and, like, but that's, like, the beauty of it, though, is because, like, where else, you know, it's, like, so amazing to have those experiences with, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. And I think that's so cool to, like, appreciate, like, raw, just, like, nature like that. And for me, in those like, more chill aspects of nature, you know, kayaking or whatever, it's been, like, an anti-anxiety for me, and it works for me. So, you know, I know I'm looking forward, like, even right now, like, we just finished these shows, I'm looking forward to going up there and just hanging out. I love it up there. And Joey came up to visit. First time he came up to visit, he flipped his kayak. We had, like, a one-of-one Frank Ocean shirt on, like, that he, like, went right in the reservoir with.
Yeah, I did not come from, like, a nature
background.
He had his
chains on.
But, like, I love that shit, man. Like, I remember the first summer that I went up there for 2 weeks, like, totally just revamped my whole life. It was just, like, a whole new experience for me, and I fell in love with it, so I love going up there and hanging out.
Yeah, and that's kind of what we do. Like, it's like I record all my music up there now and stuff, because it's like just no stress. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's also where we recorded like all the tracks we did on Reaper.
Yeah.
Besides Hope's Up.
Yeah.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yeah, and you shout out Bernie Sanders on the track, Hammer. You know, I was wondering, being from Vermont, going back kind of far in Vermont, were you, like, familiar with Bernie, into what he was about, like, before he kind of became a big thing on the national stage?
Yeah, so his wife, Jane, was actually, like, the dean of my school at one point. And, you know, everyone, I think, like, I wasn't, like, fully, like, I didn't fully delve into politics, you know what I mean? But I feel like everyone kind of knew who he was.
Yeah.
It was like, you know Ben and Jerry, you know Bernie Sanders, you know, there's, like, a few, like, characters in Vermont that you just, like, know, because, like, it's, no one lives in Vermont, and nothing happens, like, mm-hmm. not a lot happens in Vermont, But yeah, like, I just, that line is so funny. That song is so ridiculous. It is just an absurd, like, I was in such a weird headspace,
yeah.
And I think we were in such a weird headspace when we wrote that song, because, you know, a lot of my songs are, like, intrapersonal, you know, kind of like a diary-esque, and I feel like, going back to being experimental in the process, it was kind of like, what will happen if I try to make a song that isn't so heavy and downtrodden, and Hammer was kind of the result of that.
Yeah.
And it was just really fun, and I didn't know how people would take it, and you know, like, I feel like my supporters are just kind of like lax, and they're kind of cool with me doing whatever I found out, so it was fun.
Yeah, that chorus goes.
Thanks, man. Yeah, actually, after we made it, I stayed up, and you'll remember this.
Yep,
I stayed up till 6:30 or 7 a.m. in the hotel bed, looping the song over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't stop listening to it.
Yeah, I fell asleep, and I just woke up in the middle of the night because of his laptop light, and I'm like, what are you doing? But yeah, that whole, like, weekend that we wrote that track, we just played it on repeat over and over and over, because, like you said, trying new stuff just will put you in a different headspace. And once we crafted that beat real quick, it was just like, whoa, like, this is going to take us somewhere new.
Yeah.
And we were just super hyped on it the whole time. As soon as we finished it, just blasted it for the whole weekend.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, and I got to ask about Hope's Up and Chris Carrabba, too.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough to chat with Chris not that long ago for this same podcast.
Nice. And he's a great guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I asked him about you, so now I'm going to flip it around.
Yeah.
Tell me what draws you to Chris Carrabba and how that song came together.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, he's like, you know, growing up, he's like a god to me. You know what I mean? Going back to my older cousin Dan and his Volvo and playing the Swiss Army Romance, and just first, like, you know, my introduction into like hearing those types of emotions and music was Dashboard Confessional. And I feel like, you know, listening to him for so long, and eventually, like, when we were working on Hopes Up for Reaper, it was just kind of a joke at first. Not like a joke, but just like, oh man, this, we had an open verse, and I was like, I don't really know what to put for the second verse. It's kind of, you know, second verse. And I was like, man, it'd be so crazy if we had someone like Chris Carrabba on that. We were just like laughing about it. And then, like, after we got done laughing, we were just kind of like, no, but seriously, like, and I was like, we can't get Chris Carrabba or whatever. And I think Eric, you know, like our producer, kind of like reached out. And I got a voicemail from Chris saying, I don't know why I missed the call, because how could I ever miss a call from Chris Carrabba? But it's some, I think, I don't know, I think we were playing a show, we were on tour, and I got a voicemail from him, and it was like, hey, this is Chris from Dashboard. Like, I listened to this song, I really like it, and I still have that voicemail saved. And I was in the van, and I just, like, I feel like everyone, when I was listening to the voicemail, everyone thought that something was wrong, because I just was, like, speechless. And I was like, no, like, Chris Carrabba just, like, left a voicemail, and, like, this is, like, really going to happen. So, you know, after, like, that, we actually talked on the phone, and, like, you know, just, like, the nicest guy ever. And he kept saying, like, you know, like, I'm honored that someone who makes music like you likes my music. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Dude, like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm like, I wouldn't even be making music if it wasn't for him. So, and just that, people always say, like, you know, like, don't meet your heroes or whatever. But, like, no, because he is, like, the greatest guy ever. And that's just something that I'll always, like, remember and, like, cherish. So, Chris, good guy.
Yeah, the quote he gave about you in that Time story was fantastic. He the way he speaks is so spot on and so well put. It was something like talking about emo. He was saying, like, he retains all, like, the savory elements of the genre while casting off the cliches of it, something like that.
Yeah. And yeah,
like, even, sure,
yeah, like, yeah, he's so well spoken and so eloquent, and, like, you know, even hearing that now, it's like, how did I get here that someone like that would say that? So, really, just, I don't even know. If I could, like, quit music, like, I don't know, my arms could be cut off tomorrow, I couldn't play guitar or whatever, I'd be like, you know what, I still did that. Like, I got a shout out from Chris, so, yeah.
Are there some other rappers right now who really inspire you, maybe about, like, bearing, like, emotional stuff, putting stuff out there?
I've been listening to a lot of Juice WRLD lately. I just, like, I like his melodies a lot. In terms of being, like, vulnerable, like, within rap music, I don't know, I feel like, again, like, it always just comes back to, like, more DIY artists, like, within the SoundCloud space. Like, I've been listening to a lot of Wicca Phase lately. Who, I mean, he was in like, an alternative band. He was in Tiger's Jaw. And, you know, listening to Bones and Team Sesh, he has a project called Surrender Dorothy that I really like. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like maybe not so much anymore, but it's really cool that now sort of that, like, old thing where, like, you have to put on a front, or you're not allowed to be, you know, emotionally honest within the rap music space. It's just kind of cool how that's kind of dissipating, and people are, even in, like, the, you know, the top of the Billboard charts, it's like there are songs, like, that are just, people are, they're saying some real stuff, and that's cool. I think that's important that people talk about that stuff, especially within rap. Like I said, like, there's always been, like, this thing, this unspoken thing where you can't really be vulnerable. So I think it's moving in a progressive direction with that.
Juice WRLD just broke into the Billboard Hot 100 last week.
Shout out Juice WRLD. What was probably Kim Kardashian posted on a story. Crazy. Yeah. I don't even
just
know.
Like, massive,
yeah, it's, like, just crazy. He had, like, one thing on Cole Bennett's channel.
Massive Outbreak, so sick.
Just massive. And I looked at his like monthly Spotify listeners. I was like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's
just
like,
crazy how fast people blow up now. You know what I mean? Very, very wild.
Yeah, as soon as we saw that music video, we were like, yep.
That's a wrap.
This is it.
It's a wrap. It's pretty funny. But shout out Juice WRLD.
Yeah.
Yeah, sick.
Are there any other people, maybe surprising people, who like shouted you out or came to you like, yo, I fuck with this?
Hey, shout out Charlie Puth.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah. Yo, right. Yo, I woke up one morning. It probably wasn't morning. It was probably like 1 p.m. I was up like making music or whatever. And like I saw a screenshot and it was like someone sent it to me and it was like I was just waking up and it was like a screenshot of Rejector off of Ruiner. And I looked up top and it was Charlie Puth just tweeted a screenshot of Rejector. And I was like, I got to, dude, you just like don't know who's like, you don't know who's listening to your music.
And speaking of artists that are vulnerable, that are also on the Billboard charts, I was about to bring up artists like Charlie Puth that are like,
dude,
just had him on the cover.
That track that he has with Boys to Men.
Yep.
Every single day I drive to band practice, I listen to that like on loop. Like he's such a genius, dude. Like in terms of like music theory and like melody and like, man. So that's another thing where it's like really flattering for someone like that to just like, you know, give props or whatever. And then like more recently, like Travis Barker, another person that I really looked up to. You know, we've been working on some stuff together and that's just like, I don't even know.
Yeah.
Feels like you live in the Matrix, you know?
What's he like?
I haven't talked to him. I mean, we've talked through email, you know what I mean? But it just like seems like a really super nice guy and just in the legendary band.
Like, yeah, just a legendary dude who's like super into new stuff.
Yeah.
Which is sick.
And just like so cool that like, you know, he doesn't like like a person like Travis, person like Chris, person like Pete Wentz, like they don't have to, they're good. They don't have to like help younger artists or whatever, like, but they really care about music and they really care about like the type of music that is coming out. And so, you know, with Travis too, it was like, I heard he was gonna like remix some stuff and like, I don't even know. Like, there's really nothing to say other than like, you know, I'm just like super grateful. So,
can you say anything about what you have coming up with Travis?
I mean, like, he's tweeted it, so I mean, like, he definitely remixed a song.
Okay.
We got to hear it actually, and it's like pretty wild.
Crazy.
Yeah. Okay. It's just, I never would have ever thought that Travis would have like hopped on something that I make.
Yeah. And for me as a producer to hear like the greatest drummer alive rework my drums is like, what the hell am I listening to? This is crazy.
I would call him that too. He's my favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's seriously. Just crazy. He's in like marching band stuff, like just with snare drum and stuff. Like, it's crazy. And the stuff that he does with metronome, like his Instagram is just like, how are you that good at your instrument?
Yeah. And like when I was younger, I just have so many vivid memories of when I was super young, just going on YouTube and like, those were like the music videos that were popping. It was just Travis Barker drum cover of like some ridiculous song like Soulja Boy and stuff.
Yo,
like,
that was a classic.
You
remember that?
Get me so hyped.
You remember that?
No, what I remember was he did a remix of Crank That.
Yeah. And then I made my dad buy me a drum set. That was crazy.
I got a drum set too. Yeah. Probably because of Travis.
Because of that.
That was the first like I started playing drums and like, I had a mohawk when I was younger because of Travis. Like,
oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Like, there was like one summer when I was younger, I had a mohawk just because of him. And I used to draw myself like with like tattoos and stuff because I was like, Travis Barker has tattoos, so I need tattoos. So it's really cool. And super I feel like it's surreal. Just like, I don't know. I feel like it's a cool testament of like, you know, like I wish I could go back and tell my younger self that, like, you know, it's all going to be good. Just keep doing what you're doing. Because you have so many moments of self-doubt where, like, just keep failing. Like, I failed for, like, 10 years more. Just, like, no one ever cared about what I was doing. And then, like, just kept being myself. It was, like, really, like, surreal process, like, journey.
Yeah, it's from hearing you talk about these artists who have inspired you, it sounds like especially like artists, especially male artists who aren't afraid to show like emotional vulnerability, especially like someone who like is older than us, like Travis or Chris Carrab, who grew up in times when it was even more difficult for like men to show that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like important to have those role models. You know what I mean? And like, I hope that I can be a role model for someone like listening to my stuff. You know, whether they're listening to like Reaper or Ruiner or whatever comes out next, like that's all I really care about. So it's just cool. Like music is a special thing. I feel like it like it's inspired me to be the person that I am today, and like I want to just do that for some other kid, you know?
Yeah, right on.
Yeah.
And what about Pete? You mentioned him. I'm sure you got to know him a little bit through signing to his label.
Yeah.
DZD2.
Oh, no, yeah. Like, Pete will hit me up a lot. And just another thing, like, I had posters of Fall Out Boy in my room. And, you know, he called me. Someone, my manager, said that he, like, liked my music or something. And he ended up calling me. And his family actually has a house in Vermont, too. So, we were talking on the phone, and I didn't really know what to say because Pete Wentz wasn't every day that Pete Wentz was calling my phone or whatever. So, just the nicest dude ever. And we met in LA like a little bit after, and it just felt like it was just the perfect move was to start working with him because it's Pete Wentz, like, and like such a good dude. And that's the thing, like. You never really know what these people are going to be like, but like every single person that I've met within that scene
sure.
that I grew up listening to is just like a total sweetheart. And that's really cool. So.
Yo, I just thought another awesome Travis Barker remix. You guys ever hear the Umbrella remix he did?
Yes. Yeah. Dude, that one bangs.
Ooh.
That
Dude.
One bangs.
Crazy.
Yeah.
He just sort of like cranks up the drums and drops in some new metal guitars to it.
Yeah.
Damn.
So Ooh. Sick.
We'll drop that in after the interview's over.
Dude,
listeners
please,
gotta hear that.
Please do. Yo.
Yeah. He's got some really crazy ones.
Dude. It's just like I don't even know. Travis, we love you.
If you're listening, come on the podcast. Love
yeah.
to have you. Yo, so you guys touched on a lot about what you guys got coming up. Is there anything else you want to throw out there?
Recycle.
Reduce, reuse, recycle.
But keep your food inside the tent.
Keep your food inside the tent. Try some kayaking. Maybe try some meditation.
Be kind to animals.
Eat some healthy food.
Go skate.
Yeah, be yourself.
There it is. Yo, thanks so much, guys. This was fun.
Yeah, thanks.
Cool, yeah, thanks for having us.
And that is it. Yo, hope you've enjoyed the show. It was really fun doing that chat with Joe and Joey a few days after seeing their show. It left me feeling good about things and really interested to check out a lot of these other artists from their world. So you can check out some of them too. Nothing Nowhere going on tour in North America starting early August, including Billboard Hot 100 Fest. Shout out. Going to be on tour with JV, who you also just heard from. Wicked Face, Springs Eternal, and Lil West. And he's got really good merch, too. I mean, all these artists, actually, come to think of it. But Nothing Nowhere especially. So come out to the shows, check out the music, check out the merch. And like you heard in the podcast, sounds like new music is coming from these guys, too. So old episodes, I think you'd like. If you were into this new, if this is the first time you're listening, you heard us mention that we'd had a previous show with Chris Carrab of Dashboard Confessional. He chats about Nothing Nowhere a little bit in that one. Go listen to it now that you're done with this one. You can find it in our archives. Go to iTunes, the podcast app on your phone, wherever it is you find podcasts. Search for hashtag alternative facts. That's all one word. That's the name of the show. While you're there, listen to all the stuff in the archives. There's tons of old episodes. And also subscribe. Get this automatically every week without having to go search for it. And you can follow me on Twitter, too, to stay up with the show. I'm always dropping little hints on there about what's coming up next. My handle is at cpayne on a plane, CPAYNEONAPLANE. Get at it and get it. What's coming next? I'm out. I'll catch you guys later. Peace.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.